Welcome to the July 2019 episode of The Voice of the Oregon Workers, a monthly podcast from the Oregon AFL-CIO. I'm Tom Chamberlain, Oregon AFL-CIO president, and on this month's episode, we'll be sitting down with the leaders of AFSCME's Local 328. Local 328's nearly 7,000 members make the Oregon Health Sciences and University run, and they have declared an impasse in bargaining for the first time in over 20 years. We'll hear from Local 328 how it is organizing and fighting for a fair contract, and how their struggle is part of a wave of activism and collective action that is sweeping Oregon and the country. Thank you for listening.
Hi, everyone. This is Graham Traynor, Chief of Staff at the Oregon AFL-CIO, and proud to bring you the July episode of The Voice of Oregon's Workers, the Oregon AFL-CIO's monthly podcast. And this month, we are talking with AFSCME Local 328 about their fight for a fair contract at Oregon Health and Sciences University. There's been an inspiring wave of activism at OHSU's principal campus on Markham Hill in Portland. In the past year, we've seen graduate employees stand together to demand a voice in their working conditions. And just last month, over 1,000 members and supporters of Local 328 rallied to demand a fair contract in the middle of campus. The activism on Markham Hill is part of a wave of working people standing up, speaking out, and taking on fights for our rights at work and dignity on the shop floor. Last month, we brought you the voices of grocery workers fighting for fair pay and against pay inequity based on gender. The month before that, we heard from laborers at the City of Portland about organizing against severe and dramatic budget cuts at the City of Portland's budget hearing a few months ago. It's clear that as workers rise up across the country, Oregon is no exception, and in fact may be the very tip of the spear in the movement for economic justice. Local 328 of AFSCME has been in negotiations since February. Their contract expired at the end of June, and just recently they declared an impasse in bargaining. For our listeners who might not be familiar with the ins and outs of union contract negotiations, an impasse occurs when agreement cannot be reached after several steps in the process. This is the first time in 20 years that an impasse has been declared during bargaining between AFSCME Local 328 and OHSU, Oregon Health and Sciences University. This is the largest employer in Portland with over 16,000 employees and Oregon's only health and science university. The hardworking women and men of Local 328 make OHSU run, and there is no doubt about that. Local 328 has nearly 7,000 members working in over 300 different job classifications and is the largest AFSCME union in the state of Oregon. We're so excited to be joined today by Matt Hilton, president of Local 328, and Michael Stewart, vice president of Local 328, two incredible member leaders who are leading an innovative strategy this bargaining session with OHSU. And we're so excited to hear just what's going on at the Shining City on Markham Hill. Welcome, you both.
Thank you, Grant. Thanks for having us.
Great. Likewise.
Yeah. So hoping maybe each of you could just sort of introduce yourselves and tell us, give listeners a little bit of context about you and your role and sort of a little bit about what's going on, and then we'll dive a little deeper into what's going on with these negotiations.
Sure. So I'm Matt Hilton. I've been at OHSU since 2003. I have been the local president since about 2011. When I'm not doing union roles, I work as a hospital switchboard operator, and have been in that department pretty much in my OHSU career's entirety.
Wow. Well, great to have you here.
Yeah, thank you.
I know we've worked together for a long time, and it's great to especially see sort of this really innovative strategy for the local and the bargaining team to really take the reins, members taking the reins of a really, really significant negotiations for, again, the largest union of AFSCME in the state of Oregon. So welcome, Michael. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Michael Stewart. I'm the vice president. This is my first term as vice president, but I've held numerous leadership positions in the local and the council. I've been at OHSU for 15 years in internal medicine as a medical assistant, and currently I work in the HIV department.
Okay, great. And I was just thinking, Michael, it's hard for me to think of an action that I've been to where I've not seen your face. Diehard labor activist. So welcome you both. I'm hoping that that we could ground listeners a little bit in sort of what your members do. I think as the Oregon labor movement and sort of as a worker advocate by profession and by passion. I think it's really important to ground folks in the work that's being done, that we're fighting for dignity within. And so I'm hoping one of the both of you could chime in a little bit about what your members do. I know I started out talking about all of the hundreds of job classifications. So let's talk a little bit about the sort of the work that the members of Local 328 do.
Sure. So I think just sort of as a way of describing everything, it's pretty much if you're not a physician, if you're not a nurse, if you are not, we do have the graduate researchers within AFSCME, but quite a bit of research is unclassified. There's also management HR types. But outside of that, literally everything else done by OHSU is done by someone in our bargaining unit. When you call to make an appointment, that's a union member. When you come talk to the receptionist, they're in the union. When you're checked in by the medical assistant, they're in the union. After you see your doctor, the person who transcribes those notes, they're in the union. The person who does the coding for billing, they're in the union. The person who does the billing, they're in the union. We are everything from food service workers to pharmacists, from database administrators to environmental service workers. We are public safety dispatchers. We're the people that do the EKG tests. We are pretty much wall-to-wall healthcare.
Wow, that's incredible. Especially just, I mean, I feel like I know a little bit about the workers at OHSU and sort of the dynamics within 328, but I just learned something in terms of the different job classifications that are in the contract. So so what's it like? I mean, this is clearly, Portland's a union town, there's no question. Oregon, I would argue, is a strong union state as well. But what's it like working at the largest employer in the city, and knowing that you represent so many workers? You walk around and on any given day, you probably see folks that you've maybe never even met that are members of your union and in the same struggle for dignity. So I don't know, just say a few words about sort of what that's like working at such a union strong employer and a union in a union city.
I consider it a great honor to be able to be a member leader within the local and the council at large. Having grown up in a not very friendly union state and in poverty, it is it helps me with that background want to advocate for those who don't necessarily have the ability to stand up for themselves. It really is a calling, in my opinion, to help those folks who deserve a good, decent living, a good, decent benefits, and work to provide great health care and great research and for the state of Oregon and the community.
Mm-hmm. And I remember actually out on some house visit, house visits during an AFSCME blitz not too long ago, actually, with you, Michael, and just sharing your personal story was really powerful. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget that sort of I think you said something to the effect of what you just said now around, you know, it's a calling to be able to do things that help people, but but especially in the union context, being able to stand up for people that otherwise can't. Right?
That's exactly
and that's
right.
A really powerful, I think, just union-centered thing to share. So I appreciate that. So tell us a little bit about how each of you, in one way or another, I get that you've had more than a decade each in the labor movement and as a union member and activist. But what got you more involved? What for you? Both of you really, you know, sort of clicked for you and beyond just signing a membership card.
Sure. Shortly after probation, a coworker said, you know, Matt, I think you'd make a great shop steward. I had no idea what that was, but I had a fairly favorable impression of the union based on, you know, one of the first things I experienced in 2003 was I got an email from some guy named Frank saying they were disagreeing with human resources about when to implement a raise. And even though it was just a couple bucks difference, that really sort of framed an initial impression to me that the union wouldn't just have my back, but they would go like absolutely to the mat to get every little bit that was bargained for us. So being a steward, one day at a meeting, someone said, hey, we're doing a political action committee meeting if you'd like to come. And again, you know, being relatively young, this is my first union job, was thrilled to find out that the union's politics pretty much identically aligned with my own. Which then led to interest in a political action committee budget, which led to a board meeting, which led to a board seat, and then the endless vortex of volunteerism begins.
Great.
For myself, it was my first bargaining team was in 2005. And then I kind of fell out of activism, and somewhat like Matt, I was involved in some political actions where I met a future president of our local who she asked me to be part of her slate and run for political action committee chair. Because I have been politically active since coming to Oregon and before that. And so, and like Matt, it just kind of pulls you in because of the work is so rewarding and it becomes kind of a part of who you are. And it just continued on from there to keep more and more involved.
Absolutely. So let's maybe shift a little bit and talk to the specific struggle that that is before us and clearly has reached sort of a flashpoint maybe in the process, if that's a fair description. You know, let's talk a little bit about the, I think before we dive into the bargaining session, I would love, I've alluded to this sort of innovative approach to bargaining. And I think especially trade unionists that are listening and that are active in their own local would be interested to hear, especially in the wake, you know, a year after Janus, a union like Local 328 stronger than ever, maybe?
I think that would be accurate.
Absolutely.
For a long, long time. Just really, you know, hitting their stride. But I think one of the things that I've found really interesting and exciting is just sort of the model that you all have sort of developed and deployed with this bargaining team. So I don't know if you want to sort of share with listeners a little bit about that and why, kind of what's sure. important about it, why it's such a big deal.
Well, I think part of the shift was is, you know, historically we had, so one, we elect our bargaining team, they're not appointed. Historically, we had done sort of an election that was based around NLRB sectors, which as OHSUs evolved, there were some sectors that were literally 10 times the size of others, so it didn't really feel very democratic to give them the same voice. We opted to go with a fully at-large team, so basically we elected our best and brightest. And then in terms of the overall team dynamic, we operate with a consensus-based process, so everyone needs to agree. And for the first time, we are operating with having a member leader acting as the chief spokesperson. So I think for listeners, there is definitely a different dynamic when, you know, the spokespeople and the key decision makers have to eat what is cooked. And there is also so much more pride and sense of ownership in terms of how the team goes out, interacts with coworkers. I mean, there has never been a more member-driven dynamic in this local previously, and it absolutely shows. We've had record attendance at meetings. We held a rally that had 1,000 people turn out. I mean, I think in light of the Janus decision, there's a lot of people who may have previously felt they didn't need to be engaged with what was going on, or there were people who just didn't understand. But when you see that as something that can be taken away from you, suddenly interest peaks because a lot of people, you can't afford now not to be involved. You can't not pay attention because it, the only way we're going to get through this is to be united. And the way we do that is by being in our union and being active in that union.
Exactly. Yeah, the engagement, the rise, you know, we've talked a lot about the rise in collective action and teacher walkouts and everything that's happening across the country. But I think what's often lost on that conversation is just sort of how much engagement has increased since Janus for those very reasons that you just mentioned, Matt. I mean, and more, right? I mean, I think folks clearly in local unions are using in the public sector where membership is an option, you know, using contract campaigns as a membership recruitment tool, right? You know, you can't vote on the contract unless you, unless you're a member. But I think that's just some, such a minor part of like what's exciting and happening, with member engagement on the rise too. So within local unions. Yeah, go ahead, Michael.
I think, one thing that is also improved our member engagement and activism is we have a program that's been developed over the last couple of years, which is the Unit Steward Program. And unit stewards are folks that are a conduit for communication back and forth to the member leaders, in this case, the bargaining team. And they are coworkers in that work unit that people have known for years. They trust, they respect, and they know they're going to get the straight information from them. They know it's not going to be, you know, unionese, for lack of a better term. And I think we're up to 200 or more now, as I recall. And I think that's been one of the major keys to our activism, because people trust their coworkers, they trust people they respect, they trust their peers, and their peers say, explain why this is so important, why this affects patient care, why this affects their home life and their family and their income, and their ability to do their work.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, well, let's dive into the fight. But I'll just say, before we talk about the fight, I'll just say a little bit about what we just talked about around the strength of Local 328. The labor movement is always in a fight. Working people are always getting screwed, and the corporate agenda is alive and well everywhere you look, in the Oregon Capitol and every state legislature across the country. But the way that you win fights, the way that you take on fights in an effective way, is to have strong unions. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you both have just shared a little bit about how Local 328 strengthened. So I appreciate that. Before we dive into the fight details, I wanted to just talk a little bit about what's been going on at OHSU, let's say over the last decade. It feels like there's a lot of changes. It seems like, while it's a public institution, it's a little confusing sometimes because it seems like it acts kind of like a corporation. So, I don't know, Matt, maybe you can share a little bit about what's going on with OHSU.
So, it can be a little confusing. So, Oregon, the state of Oregon, is not OHSU. Going back to 1996, there was a decision made to give OHSU autonomy from the state. Well, as a public corporation, they do enjoy certain benefits, like a tort cap. They receive state funding for the educational purposes. They also have a medical malpractice cap. On the flip side, OHSU is very much also the corporation that's in their title. Their annual budget is over $3 billion. Their incoming president, Danny Jacobs, starts at about 15 times what the governor makes. OHSU, in terms of cash on hand, this is meaning if we didn't have a red cent coming in, how long can we keep the lights on, payroll flowing, all that? They've got $1.5 billion cash on hand, or 6 months of essentially operations just banking right there. They've got a AA credit rating in terms of how they've done this year. They are north of $80 million above budget projections. OHSU is not only thriving, but they are continuing to build partnerships, consolidate, and grow. People think of OHSU as Markham Hill. In reality, we have members working in Longview, Washington. We have people in the Grand Oregon. We have folks in Astoria. We have folks in Ashland. I mean, that 16,000 people statewide, OHSU is just growing and will continue to grow. Mm-hmm. I think the question is what sort of OHSU is going to exist in the future based on the OHSU that formerly very much had a public mission and was centered around improving the health of all Oregonians? At some point, is OHSU more of a corporation that dabbles in healthcare, or are they really that entity that is meant to be that public mission and better strive to meet our needs as a state and as individuals?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure listeners are also, you know, confused like I have been around sort of what's going on up there, right? That's assuming that OHSU, like you just mentioned, is just the Markham Hill presence. And in fact, for all the reasons you mentioned, consolidation, sort of this corporate themed growth and expansion and partnership, set of partnerships. Clearly, that's not necessarily the case. Anything to add, Michael, just about what's going on up there? Okay, cool. Well, why don't we dive really quickly into just kind of what's happening with the fight? So tell listeners a little bit about the issues that you're fighting for and sort of, assume that listeners have a little bit of understanding of contract bargaining, but maybe not a lot. So, share a little bit about where we're at.
Well, why don't we make this a two-parter? Let me cover some of the main fronts, and Michael can also talk about some of the philosophical fight.
Great.
So, like we mentioned, as OHSU is growing and their revenue is spiking, I think they're kind of envisioning a scenario where they can, well, they call it controlling labor costs, which is essentially code for reducing, wages and benefits. So recognizing that OHSU has literally never been better and has a ridiculous amount of money, both in terms of earnings as well as banked, there used to be sort of a sacred social compact that if you worked for a public healthcare institution, you would have good healthcare. So after decades and decades, OHSU came to the table and wanted to do some cost shifts on premiums for single employees. Mm-hmm. So they would start paying for their healthcare premiums for the first time ever. Families or dependents or however you'd like to cover it currently pays 12% of their healthcare costs. OHSU proposed increasing that to 17%. Shifting the premiums aside, they had proposed something that was especially odious called a spousal surcharge. OHSU wanted to charge employees $1,200 a year for the privilege of covering your spouse on your healthcare plan. Even though you are already paying premiums, you are already paying copays and all those other expenses, they wanted to add this in addition to it. Now, their stated goal was not to recoup some of the healthcare spend. They intentionally wanted to make it so onerous for people to cover a spouse that if they had an option to get health care through a different employer, that they would drop and go through that employer. Now, where we had concerns are, you know, there is quite a bit of social stratification at OHSU, and not everybody has the ability to, say, get onto a comparable healthcare plan with an employer. If you have a spouse who's working, odds are it's probably more than 30 hours a week, which means there's probably some sort of ACA healthcare plan they're required to offer. Now, is a healthcare plan at, say, McDonald's on par with OHSU? No. But under their proposal, people would absolutely be forced to pay that $1,200. The other issue on top of all this is they had said basically, in addition to healthcare costs, anything that is more than a 5% increase in terms of annual medical costs, we would like the members to pay in its entirety. Part of the rally around Markham Hill, I think, was in response to that, and they have at the table consistently gotten better around healthcare benefits. One of our main concerns at this point is we don't want to have a proposal or a system that creates two tiers, where longer-term employees get a better situation than newer employees, or where some people get higher raises than others. Currently, I think the main sticking point, OHSU is playing around with a dangerous concept. Now, we're going to make a reference to PTO, and that acronym is for paid time off. Now, some people would think, oh, no, I have PTO at my job. It's great. I've got a bank where I can use sicker vacation. I've got flexibility. That seems like a good thing. So here's where OHSU's PTO program is a little wonky. So technically, there is a PTO bank that you can use for vacation or sick. What gets problematic is they're not giving you all of your sick time into that bank. They're creating a second bank, which they're calling the Extended Illness Bank, that you can only access if you have a major healthcare problem or an FMLA, OFLA, chronic healthcare condition. And the only way you can get into that bank is if you burn 5 PTO days prior to that point. So for some people with chronic health conditions or other issues, they're instantly at a loss. For other people, there's going to be some major issues that they're just either not budgeting properly for their healthcare decisions or an emergency comes up. OHSU had some town halls where they were talking about their PTO proposal, and they admitted, let's say you went off to Europe for quite some time, burned all your PTO and came back. If you broke your leg the next day, you would have to take 5 unpaid days before they would let you access that bank. And in a lot of cases, you're going to have people who are trying to choose, okay, do we keep the vacation we planned to go to Disneyland with the kids, or do I come into work sick to deal with my patients? And that's not a choice that people should be making. Mm-hmm. The other problem with their PTO proposal is at the time, OHSU thought they were doing something fabulous by offering a paid parental leave benefit. Now, to be clear, we support paid parental leave, and we were very heartened to see that law passed this session, which may be taking some of the wind out of their sails, but at the time, OHSU was absolutely promoting a significantly less generous leave than the current law. But here's the trick. The way that they paid for this, and this is absolutely tied to the PTO proposal. If you have the PTO, you also get this component. Currently, at OHSU, we have people that have worked there for decades, and you will accrue vacation that rolls over time. Currently, when you separate from OHSU, you can cash out up to 250 hours of vacation. Now, some people use that as a bridge before their retirement starts. There's a lot of other things you can pay for with that money, but for some people, it's a nest egg or an insurance policy. When you leave, you have the vacation that you've earned to be accessible. Under OHSU's proposal, regardless of length of service, moving forward, you essentially get 40 hours, which is, you know, thinking of 210 hours and 80-hour paycheck increments, that's over a month's pay, which they're grabbing just to pay for a benefit that we didn't ask for, to force people into a healthcare or a paid time off model that no one wanted. And it really is unfortunate that people are being put in this position that could potentially jeopardize patient care, that can make employees leaving the employer less economically secure, all to pad what is already an incredibly thick bottom line.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And what's interesting is, I mean, you pointed out the law that just passed that we're obviously as a labor movement really proud of. Makes me really happy that it actually might take a little wind out of their sails in terms of the proposal that was clearly disingenuous to try to force the workers' hands towards this PTO policy that no one wanted. So, Michael, anything to add before we move on?
I just want to talk about, you know, earlier we were discussing OHSU starting out as a public entity and moving more corporate. That seemed to make a big change, a big shift in that direction after 2010 with the arrival of a new CFO. I mentioned earlier I was in the 2005 bargaining team, and I saw a distinct change in OHSU's attitude the next time I was in the bargaining team, which was 2012. And that isn't just in terms of how they interact and how they treat their employees. It also goes over to patient care. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, they sent out in one of their emails to the membership, to the employees, that they were changing the policy on the inpatient floors in terms of snacks for patients. Now, this might seem like a small thing, but for me, it goes to the philosophy of a healthcare organization in terms of how they view their responsibility to the patients. And what that change in policy did is it changed it from a patient could ask for a snack if they were, you know, feeling a little hungry in between meals. And if a family was up visiting, they could do the same thing. Now, again, we're not talking full-on meals here. We're talking snacks like, string cheese, crackers, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. OHSU sent out a communications that said, for now on, for a patient, it has to be medically necessary, and it was no longer to be given to families, visiting families, as a cost-cutting measure. Now, OHSU has not been hurting for money for some time now. Mm-hmm. And to me, that goes to the heart of who you are as an organization. Now, they finally did rescind that, but it was mostly after uproar from, you know, the frontline folks who actually care for those patients, mm-hmm. and have to tell those patients and their families, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I can't give you a snack because, you know, the executive said no. Mm-hmm. Secondly, recently, I mentioned I work in internal medicine, and they changed the rooming policy. We used to have 20 minutes to room a patient, and that allows for everything that needs to be done. There's quite a bit of things that are required to check a patient in appropriately for a doctor to see. Mm-hmm. They recently cut that in half and changed it to 10 minutes. Now, in that, you're supposed to have the time for a patient to arrive, check in at the front desk, take them to the room, check their vitals, check their med list, allergies, and on and on and on and on. So a 10-minute arrival time and check-in time does not make for any time for somebody being 5 minutes late, mm-hmm. For elderly patients to be able to get to the room, for, again, extensive medications list. And what it does, it takes the human element out of patient care. Mm-hmm. Because when I go to the doctor, I don't just go there to be treated like a widget. I go there to be treated like a human being. Mm-hmm. You know, I have all the respect for what my United Auto Workers union siblings do. But that's not what I signed up for. Mm-hmm. I didn't sign up for industrialization. Mm-hmm. I signed up to give good, caring, hard work, and compassion to my patients. Mm-hmm. And when you make those changes, you're taking that out of the equation.
You know, one of the things that I, as a, you know, somebody who's been in the labor movement for quite a while now, I just admire and I respect so much anytime I talk to folks that are represented by any of our healthcare unions. So folks that work in the healthcare sector, whether they be nurses or professionals in the healthcare system just in general. The first thing they lead with is patient care as a priority, right? And so to hear you, Michael, say sort of that's such a critical component to the passion that you have for your job, but we also know that fairness and dignity and workers' rights go hand in hand with patient care in the healthcare sector, right? So I just think that I think that was a really important point, or several points that you made to just sort of illustrate the prioritization here. Mm-hmm. This isn't just a greedy group of workers by any means, mm-hmm. right? This is a group of workers that value patient care and you know, patient advocacy first and foremost, and want to be have a fair deal too, right? Mm-hmm. Really appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, again, it's the culture. Yeah. It's how you view both your mission and the people that carry out that mission. Mm-hmm. And the culture has shifted, mm-hmm. and it continues to shift. And I feel like it's our duty as member leaders and activists to make sure that we defend the culture that we have helped grow within OHSU mm-hmm. since being hired, mm-hmm. 15 years. Mm-hmm. So I think that's very, very important to let folks know.
Great. Well, back to just some of the details of the fight. I wanted to talk, I led a little bit about impasse and sort of what happened 1 week ago, actually. Today's Friday, last Friday. Tell us a little bit about just a few of the events that have really led to that. That seems like a pretty important flashpoint in the process of bargaining. So maybe share with listeners why did that happen 1 week ago?
Well, I think there's a few areas of some pretty extensive frustration. I mean, getting back to that caring for patients in our community, we'd made a proposal to have a staffing task force. The overall cost to OHSU would basically be to pay the lost time for our members, the release time for our members to attend the meetings. This would be less than $1,000 a year. They refused to agree to our task force proposal that would essentially be something that couldn't be arbitrated and wasn't even binding. There's that level of not viewing the union as a partner, but more as like the cost of doing business. I think what's just aggravating is, so on Friday, we've been bargaining since February. We'd already had 5 prior days of mediation. That morning, right out the gate, we just said, look, if there's going to be healthcare takebacks, if there's going to be a two-tiered system, or if there's going to be any reference of this PTO model that no one wants, we're going to be an impasse. 6 hours later, their proposal included a two-tiered system for the vacation cash-outs, where any person who would be hired after the agreement would absolutely be forced into that cash out reduction, and they would be mandated to be in the PTO system. So we said, okay, we weren't saber rattling. No means no. Guess who gets impasse? Mm-hmm. And there we are.
So what happens next? What's the next step in the process?
Well, it's going to be a multifaceted event, essentially. So first and foremost, for listeners, for people that get their health care at OHSU, for people that are passionate about supporting, you know, our fellow brothers and sisters and union siblings, please join us at OHSU on August 8th, beginning at 4 p.m. for our informational picket. We're going to have a few different speakers, including NAFSME International President Lee Saunders, who is a fantastic speaker. We're going to be marching from about 4:30, 4:15-ish to 6 p.m. This is going to be a march that ideally shows OHSU that workers need to be treated with respect, mm-hmm. that our public mission is absolutely essential. And the hope is that they can be moved to where we get to the 13th, and we can get a fair deal at that day's mediation. Now, if we can't get a deal at that point, clearly things are just, it's not going wrong. We've clearly gone off the rails. At that point, we will begin our strike authorization vote on the 19th. It will be a 10-day period through the 29th, and we have another mediation with OHSU on the 30th. I want to be clear. This local does not want a strike. We want a fair contract that honors the sacrifice that our members have made. In a time of record profits for OHSU, people should not be seeing less money on their paycheck or having record out-of-pocket costs for their health care.
Mm-hmm. Amen. So for listeners, as we work to wrap this up today, just wanted to make sure that beyond the August 8th action, where President Lee Saunders is going to be, which I'm really excited to have his presence in the Northwest, this is a really important struggle for AFSCME and for our state and for the national labor movement. Beyond August 8th, what else can folks do? What else can members of the community, what else can members of the labor community do to support workers in getting a fair deal so that they can continue to accomplish the goals that Michael laid out in terms of really, really critical, high caliber patient care?
Absolutely. So there's a few things you can do. One thing people have been doing is writing letters to the editor, speaking to community organizations. I mean, it's also important that OHSU hears from our community about their concerns about what is going to happen to our OHSU. You are able to call 503-494-8311 and ask for the president's office. You can definitely speak with someone there and tell them how you feel. Mm-hmm. I think there is definitely there is a certain anxious energy regarding how things are going to be going once we get to the 30th of August. Mm-hmm. Our hope is that we settle on the 13th. Mm-hmm. There will absolutely be significantly more information about ways to help if we do get to that point. Mm-hmm. For right now, we are optimistic that OHSU is going to be the responsible employer that it needs to be, and that we can come to an agreement. Mm-hmm. If not, community support is going to be essential, and we absolutely would be incredibly appreciative of any support anyone wants to offer.
Great. And the differential picket will be family friendly. I mean, bring your kids, bring your friends. You don't have to be a union. You don't have to be a patient. You just have to be somebody that is concerned about their community and the folks that live in it, because OHSU employees and AFSCME members are the community of Portland. Mm-hmm. And that's what some people forget. And so as a member of the community, we want everybody to come and show support for folks that are just trying to get a fair contract from an entity that can definitely do it.
Mm-hmm. And I was really honored last month to be invited to share just a few remarks at the big action that happened right in the middle of campus. And I think, to me, that was really clear that there was already a huge amount of community support, not just the workers that are sort of dedicated to, you know, excellent patient care, but also the concerned community was there and in force and really powerful. That was a really powerful statement. So we've got time just for a few final words. So I'd love to hear just sort of in as we wrap things up, tell us just kind of some final words you'd like to leave listeners with about this struggle and what it means for your members and for the Oregon Union Movement.
Sure. You know, I think our bargaining team absolutely feels the support. And there's a lot of folks in the community, be they AFSCME or no, be they union or no. There is so much support and solidarity going on. It has been just an honor to be a participant and to watch this. It is an absolute new day for labor, and it shows.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Any final words, Michael?
For me, it's I want to reiterate that we feel like that we have been integral as AFSCME members and the work that we do up there to OHSU success. Mm-hmm. And that success has led to, you know, huge bonuses for the executives up there, literally, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. We're not asking for things that are, you know, we're not being greedy. Mm-hmm. What we're asking for is for them to acknowledge that hard work done by the folks there that supply quality care to some of the most complicated and sick patients in the state of Oregon and across the country. That work deserves respect. That work deserves acknowledgement. And the best way that we can get that is to get a fair contract, and then we can go on to doing the work that we love so much, and that's taking care of our patients who rely on us.
Absolutely. Well, it's clear to me, not just with this conversation, but especially because of this conversation, that OHSU works because AFSCME Local 328 works and does the work of the organization and the institution that clearly has money to spare. So I just wanted to thank you both for being on the show this month. We're proud to highlight this important struggle, and we're going to be right there with you on August 8th and every step of the way beyond. So you've been listening to the July episode of The Voice of Oregon's Workers, the Oregon AFL-CIO's monthly podcast. If you like what you've heard, please make sure to share and like and have all your friends and family do the same. Have a great day. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.